second lesson. We made it through about a page and a half last time, I think, so working our way through. And what we talked about last time is that we are just talking about the biblical teaching on sex. And this is our last lesson in terms of the marriage lessons. So we talked about loving leadership, how a husband should lead, joyful submission, how a wife can submit. We've talked about oneness and how to have biblical conflict resolution and to address sin. We talked about money. So we're talking about sex now and how it should take place within marriage. And last time, what we talked about was that there's multiple purposes for sex within marriage. And so the first one we talked about last time, I think it's A, B, C, D instead of 1, 2, 4, but we talked about the fact that it's unifying. So the husband leaves his father and mother and unites to his wife, and they cleave together, and sex is a unifying factor. And so today, we're going to talk about B, right? And so that sex is pleasurable. Okay. And I'm not going to ask for any volunteers on this first passage. I'll just go ahead and read it for you guys. Okay. Unless I have any eager volunteers. Okay. Yeah, very wise. Okay, so we're at the bottom of page 2. Right? So Proverbs 5:15 through 19. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well, should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets. Let them be for yourself alone, and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight, and be intoxicated always with her love. So as you read that, right, what are some kind of key words there that point out that this is not necessarily the point to procreate or create children, right? What is pointing to, or necessarily unifying or temptation? What is pointing to that it's about the pleasure?
Intoxicated.
Intoxicated, yes, right? It totally takes over.
Fill you at all times with delight.
Yes, filled with delight, right? You should always be filled with delight. Mm-hmm. I see, rejoice, mm-hmm. Be blessed.
Mm-hmm. Breasts don't reproduce.
That's right. The breasts are not the reproductive, right? So you can delight in the parts that are not the reproductive parts, okay? Okay, that's good. We kind of broke the ice. We're through the tough passage to start with. Right? Especially if anybody's in here in class today with their parents. Or, right. Feel free, answer questions. Right? So, why do you guys suppose, right, here's a question, why do you think that God made sex and intimacy pleasurable? Right? The question, why not just make it a command and you could give both parties a headache until they fulfill their duty? What do you think his reasoning is?
I think it goes back to what we were talking about last week with it being unifying. Mm-hmm. And so with it being pleasurable, it makes it easier to unify.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very motivating in the sense that it's easy to come together if it's something that's pleasurable. Okay.
Probably also with point C, that it encourages you to procreate.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you could say that with the curse, if it wasn't pleasurable, and you think about all the pain that's associated with childbirth, it might be a disincentive, right, to not participate.
It just really leads to a contempt between both the husband and the wife, and then also parents and their kids.
If it was a chore and just...
Yeah, it was just a chore.
It's pleasurable because God gives good gifts.
Yeah.
This is meant to be a good gift to be enjoyed by his creation in the right way. Mm-hmm. So simple as that, God chose to make it that way because he wants to give us pleasure.
Yeah, he's a very good God, and so his gifts are very good. Think about creation and how he looked and said, everything was very good. Behold, everything was very good in that sense. Anything else? So he made it pleasurable. He made it as a wonderful gift. And so how does that, what does that do to enhance your relationship? How does the fact that it's mutually pleasurable, how does that help your marriage? Or how might it help your marriage if you're not married? I'm thinking about it.
Well, it's not one side taking from the other. Mm-hmm. I think it's an opportunity for both sides to give to the other, so the other person enjoys it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a sense sometimes where you can show love towards your spouse, but it can be one-sided, where I'm going to do this, and it's an act of I'm serving you, or I'm going to give you words of affirmation, or all these ways that I can show love to you, and it's one receives and one gives. And so in this kind of unique way, sex is something where you can be mutually giving and receiving at the same time. And so it's, you have the opportunity to act in service to your spouse and love them that way, but also receive at the same time.
If it does go both directions, then one, oftentimes, that's a pattern. One is using the other. That's oftentimes a category for abuse. It's an abusive relationship, mm-hmm. where the person uses the other for their own benefit, not thinking of how to give themselves to the other. Mm-hmm. So it really upends the whole concept of sexual abuse, even within the marriage relationship or domination.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, out of the four that we're talking about, this is the one that the culture and the world tends to draw out as like the key purpose. And so they would kind of agree that sex should be pleasurable. But when we talk about it, right, we're talking about the other, right, or mutually. That it's meant to give to and love your spouse, and it's meant to be mutually pleasurable. Whereas when you think about the world, it can be primarily self-focused. And even, like you said, can be abusive, demeaning, and it can diminish maybe one person in the eyes of the other in that sense. And so there is a difference in terms of how sex in a Christian marriage, it seeks to, it's not just seeking your own pleasure, it's seeking that of your spouse as well. No comments, okay. So this may seem like an obvious one, but we just want to point out specifically, so is the pleasure sex restricted to the orgasm? So this is a yes or no?
No.
No, okay, good. So why? Why is it not just about the orgasm and sex? Why is the other part? Why are the other parts important?
Come on, married couples.
Come on, married couples. Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot of there's the pleasure of closeness. Mm-hmm. There's a pleasure of just kind of sharing your own private world. Mm-hmm. There's the pleasure, I think, of even being desired. Mm-hmm. It's more than just like one singular moment. Mm-hmm. It's like, why do people hold hands or kiss or hug or any of those things? I mean, it's a sign of affection.
Yeah, and I think with this, what I'm getting at is, when you think back to our first example, both of the people came into marriage kind of redeemed out of a place where they were influenced by either romance novels or pornography,
yeah.
Right? They had this really warped view of what sex was supposed to look like in marriage. And so if you kind of restrict it to just, okay, the goal is for both people to have this physical climax, that sets a certain expectation for the purpose of sex within our marriage. And if that's something that doesn't take place, it kind of negates all the other good things that can come through sexual expression and that physical intimacy. Okay. So as Dave talked about, there can be the physical oneness, there's kind of that personal, private world that just is between the two of you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I'll weigh in again since nobody is talking. But
I'm waiting, I've got my eyes.
Yeah, I was talking to an older friend of mine, and the ability to have an orgasm is past yet. Mm-hmm. you know, surgery, stuff like that, it's an impossibility. Mm-hmm. But he said, you know, he and his wife make it a point to really have like some kind of physical intimacy mm-hmm. of snuggling, hugging, and all that stuff, mm-hmm. Because that's still an important part of the relationship. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of good because he kind of, many of those elements are not just about the mm-hmm. orgasm
yeah.
or driving towards that. It's yeah. about experiencing the intimacy and the closeness in a way that's unique to your spouse, even if that's not a possibility.
Yeah. I think that what we're getting at, kind of with that question too, is we want to be able to embrace an idea that says that there's a large portion of physical intimacy that you can have as husband and wife that doesn't include the orgasm or might not result in that, that is valuable. And that it's, we ought not to feel like we are failing in some sort of way if not every encounter and every instance ends in that way. There's a lot of good blessings that can come through experiencing that physical oneness. And also, like, I think what you said, mm-hmm. committing to continuing to engage in that physical. Can you guys think of times and seasons? So there's age is one of them. Mm-hmm. You reach a certain age, it may be more difficult to engage in or have the same kind of physical intimacy. Are there other life circumstances that may interfere with your ability to have sex as you, like you did when you were newlyweds?
Giving birth.
Yeah, childbirth, right? So childbirth is gonna radically, you know, affect pregnancy, nursing, getting up with the baby, being exhausted, right? All of those things can influence that. And I think it would be a mistake to say, well, we'll wait till all that's done to have sex again, right? 15 years from now, and all the kids, right, or 5 years. So you kind of have to learn that it's more about the connection between you and your spouse than it is just trying to be the same as when you have all your energy and those type of things. So any other thoughts or questions kind of around that idea?
I think a lot of what makes it pleasurable is the fact that it's exclusive. So like, lots of people can make a good meal for my husband mm-hmm. or make a movie he enjoys or whatever, but like mm-hmm. I'm the only person that he can legitimately mm-hmm. find any of that whole world of pleasure in mm-hmm. and that's the huge difference between the biblical view and the world's
right.
view. The world's
right.
view is you're trying to please your flesh mm-hmm. any way you can with whoever you want mm-hmm. and the biblical view is I hold this power, mm-hmm. Both, you know, mutually, that mm-hmm. I'm the only person he can mm-hmm. find this in. And so
yeah.
that's what makes it so unifying.
Yeah. And I think that has a lot to do with how, like, if you come out of, if you weren't a believer until later in life, and you had a kind of that world-focused view, that real self-focus is like, it reduces sex to almost a purely physical, it's just purely physical. When really there's a true spiritual, relational aspect that pleasure kind of is connected to. And that aspect, it's related to just that one. And you'll notice that in that passage before we move on, if you look back, that's one of the big focuses. Everybody look back at Proverbs. That's one of the big focuses, if not the focus, right? It's in the context of sex, but it says, from your own cistern, right? Should they be scattered abroad in the streets, let them be for yourself alone, not for strangers, right? So he's focused on all of your delight, and this is key, right? All of your delight should come only from your spouse. And it's not just talking about adultery. It's like that includes pornography or fantasizing, your mental, your heart, all of that should be devoted to your spouse and your spouse mm-hmm. alone. And so when you experience that, it creates a certain special bond with your spouse that can't be formed and can't be fulfilled in any other way. Mm-hmm. And so the pleasure is physical, but there's a whole other aspect to that. Yeah, Josh.
It's also interesting in Proverbs that these are commands to rejoice in the wife of your youth, to find delight in her, to be intoxicated So there's the mental piece where, I think this is kind of an older person at this point, because it says you're in the wife of your youth, so now to get older, there's a choice to be made to give yourself over in joy to your spouse or not.
Mm-hmm.
And as people get older, they can choose not to give themselves over fully and happily and joyfully, and their mindset will radically affect that sexual life,
yeah,
and the joy that comes from it.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. We've talked, I think, multiple times about how they can become more like roommates, and it's kind of there's no physical aspect to it. And this, it does force you to be open, right, in a way that you don't have to be if you're not engaging in physical intimacy, right?
Yeah, I'll add one other thing
one
here
more.
Too. Yeah. Like when you look at the part of the pleasure is the unifying element of two people coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason why masturbation is just something that will just kill a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really is self-focused.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing that you care about.
Yeah.
And it can lead to the other party being used for that. And
mm-hmm.
Some selfish habits. There's not the continual pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
And being drawn to a relationship. And I've seen some marriages, like in marriage counseling, like when the ability to, because of masturbation or because of age or something like that, when that's no longer part of the relationship just goes cold and the husband stops pursuing his wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that way. And it just changes the dynamics of the marriage for the worse.
Yeah, I think one thing Dave hit on was that, like, not just the physical aspect, but like when you think about sex within marriage, you have your relationship, and your oneness. It often leads to that sex, and if your relationship status of that relationship is strained, if there's conflict, it's often not going to, one of the parties or both is not going to want to engage in physical intimacy.
Yeah,
and so if you don't resolve that,
yeah,
and come back together, it often can lead to things like masturbation, pornography, where you're seeking to meet that need without resolving, without coming together relationally with your spouse. And it can grow a greater and greater division, where each one's
mm-hmm.
seeking to meet their needs outside of their spouse.
Yeah.
Whereas if we do come together, it can be very unifying. Unifying, right? Right? Showing love to one another, and it can, build the relationship.
Yeah.
It kind of create a cycle that continues to come together. It helps renew that covenant, renew that oneness, that
yeah.
intimacy.
And often it motivates the husband to pursue fixing the relationship.
That's true. That's true. It's a good, great motivator.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's not just the sense that there is a certain truth that couples have more sex when their relationship is in good standing,
mm-hmm.
and it's less when there's more conflict. But even I would say that the fact that the pleasure is not just physical, that it's relational, when that relationship is strained, it even if you have sex, it's not the same quality as when you have resolved and developed a closeness within your relationship. So there's a sense in which you're motivated not just to get your wife and get your husband to participate and have sex, but it's also you are trying to make that relationship one, where everything has been resolved, where you're totally together, you're on the same page. So let's look at a case study. All right, let's look at Jane and Grayson.
Yeah, Jane and Grayson.
Jane and Grayson, okay. Jane grew up in a Victorian household where the topic of intimacy never came up. And while away at Bible college, Jane met and fell in love with Grayson, godly young man who hoped to enter the ministry. 6 months before graduation, they got engaged, knowing that sex was in their future. Jane checked out a medical book from the library. Since she had been homeschooled and her family never talked about the subject, this was her first introduction, and what she found disgusted her. When she asked her mother about it, she told Jane that sex is gross and a rather unpleasant aspect of marriage, but the wife must put up with it because most men expect it. On her wedding night, Jane dutifully went through the motions, but did not enjoy anything at all. In fact, after 5 years and 2 children, she informed her husband that while she loved him, sex was just a burden for her. Okay. So what were some assumptions, right? What were some assumptions that we see Jane making about intimacy? How did she view it?
It was a chore.
What else? There's several hints in there and words.
She says it was gross twice.
Yeah. And it disgusted her. A gross, disgusting chore. Okay, what else is her expectation?
She already made up her mind she wasn't going to like it.
Yeah. This is not going to be any good. Anything else?
It's for him.
It's for him, yeah.
Expect it.
What do you think? Is Jane expecting that she will continue to have sex with her husband?
It's a cross she must bear.
Yeah, it's a duty and a cross. She's like, I will do it because I will bear this burden. Right? She uses the word burden. Right?
I don't think it says it, but does she think it's just for procreation?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't know why, but like her mother said, that a wife must put up with it. And the reasoning was, most men expect it. I like how she said most. So what, I mean, if you were to go and bring her to, right, Proverbs, what's something that she can gain from studying the scriptures, right? Her expectations right now are, right, it's gross, disgusting, chore, and I have to put up with it and bear this burden.
I'm assuming that Grayson is a faithful, godly husband.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it should bring her some level of comfort, delight, pleasure, that Grayson is trying to pursue her.
Mm-hmm.
In Proverbs 5, like, he is finding his pleasure in her.
Mm-hmm.
He does delight in her. Like, that should,
yeah,
that should be an encouragement to,
right,
her and draw her closer to him.
Right. She can be reminded that it is a good thing that he is pursuing her, right, and wanting to have sex. What else? How can we reshape her expectations? What would we want to help her to see?
If she realizes that it's a gift from God,
mm-hmm,
then whatever led her mom to teach her this way, like, it's not gonna, maybe she's worried that she,
mm-hmm,
will be dirty,
mm-hmm,
and she will be,
yeah, so
disgusting if she enjoys it.
One thing I thought this was great at bringing out is that many people, especially from Christian homes, that are only talked about the negative aspect, the put off, can start to have this association that sex is dirty, disgusting, it's sinful almost, right? And if you're only talking about what to put off and never what you are to put on, right, you can get this warped view of sex that, oh, it's, they see all the negative applications of how sex is negative, it's negative, it's negative, viewed outside of the context. So she's really missing, like, sometimes we talk about sin, it's like the garden, right? You've got to pull the weeds out, but you've also got to what?
Plant
something to grow. And so, you know, the scripture sounds like she's got some barren ground there without not only really any weeds growing, but she's got, needs to plant something good to grow. Yeah?
This isn't quite the question, but when she told her husband that sex is a burden for her, it could actually be a really wonderful opportunity for the husband to say, I don't want sex to be a burden to you. How do we unpack this so it can be a joy to you? Because there's,
mm-hmm,
a worldview issue that she comes to think it's dirty, it's,
mm-hmm,
necessary, but kind of a necessary evil.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, like, this is very real world, especially,
yeah,
in conservative Christian circles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've dealt with couples like this. I'm in Mexico City, a particular church, people came out of that. The women were pretty messed up in their view of sex because,
mm-hmm,
it was viewed just like this. So her saying this gives the husband a chance to say, I don't want to be a burden to you. let's learn together
mm-hmm.
about what a healthy sexual relationship looks like. And that's going to require some really practical wisdom that will
mm-hmm.
probably happen with a couple in private, not in this setting.
Mm-hmm.
But a healthy sexual relationship, I think some single people think that it's going to happen like automatically, like everything's going to be awesome. And it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time to learn each other's desires, bodies, how to bring joy to one another. And since he didn't know that she viewed it this way, I can imagine him being totally ignorant. He thought it was pleasurable for her, so now they have a
mm-hmm.
chance to start over. And that's a really beautiful opportunity for both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point, right? So it's going to be something that they both need to go through together. And he can really help her in this, in the way that he approaches it, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it, communicate. And yeah, and this kind of, the way this plays out a lot of times is kind of a, like a fruit of that underlying communication or lack of communication. And so when it seems like maybe something isn't right here, often the place to look is we need to talk about why and what might be causing an issue for one or for both of us. And that's just an ongoing, like Dave was talking about the example, if one partner is aging and their body is changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the woman is going through menopause or premenopause, right? Or if they've had just had a baby, right? There's all these physical things. There's also a lot of just life changes, stresses, changing jobs, moving, right? That can affect all of your schedule. It can affect the way that you make time for one another. If you have one of you having to work an extra amount and you're just extremely exhausted, right, then that,
mm-hmm.
that's going to affect all those things. And not talking about it can influence you're expecting one thing and something
yeah.
else. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's also very important that our conscience is informed.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mental state's very important.
Yeah.
And if you decide beforehand that you don't want to enjoy something.
Yeah.
Or that you can't enjoy it, otherwise you're dishonoring God in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you kind of have a seared conscience where it's enjoyable, you know, because of stolen water,
mm-hmm.
You know, that just takes away from the overall purpose
yeah.
behind it and it twists it. And,
yeah.
and I think the other thing is if it's not enjoyable for, if you're not accepting it the way God intended,
mm-hmm.
it will not have its intended effect on the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be something that brings you together, because next thing you know, Grayson's going to feel guilty
yeah.
every time too. And so
yeah.
it's going to be something that causes guilt and distance
yeah.
Instead of, you know, bringing people together, making them more intimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
It's me and Dave.
Yeah.
One more thing that's not here, but I think it's worth bringing up, is that a significant percentage of women and men have been sexually abused.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to affect their view of sex oftentimes
mm-hmm.
in a similar way as maybe this woman grew up thinking it was gross and dirty
right.
and evil.
Right.
So as people go into marriage,
mm-hmm.
it's worth shaping your worldview, your mind, in a biblical way about what sex really is
mm-hmm.
and not let the sin of others be what shapes your understanding of God's gift to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really, we have,
mm-hmm.
we want to go and look at God and the Word, and then we also want to talk to both man, woman, right? That communication where they're both studying the Word together, and then they're talking with one another about what has shaped them, what has been their prior experiences, all of those things are going to be crucial to help them reach a point where they work towards right, honoring the Lord by using and experiencing physical intimacy the way that God created it. This is what God says in His Word. And we're going to talk about even more scriptures that speak specifically to husbands and wives and physical intimacy. So they're both trying to do this, but each one is going to probably have their own challenges as to what makes it hard for them to either enjoy that or work towards being unified or procreation. Like, each one, they may feel like, and bring up thoughts of abusive relationships. They're each going to have challenges, and it's going to a place where they both have to kind of redeem sex
in their own life individually, so that as a marriage, because remember, right, the marriage is meant to picture the gospel, right? It's a picture of the gospel. And when there's something wrong with your marriage, it's often picturing a wrong understanding of how the gospel works in your life. Okay? And so they're all really closely tied together. Yeah?
Just kind of a separate question, I guess, but as I'm looking at pleasure and expectations, should you go into sex with expectations, or should you, I guess I'm thinking of it in the fact of like going into sex of serving the other and caring for the other person. So is it biblical to go into sex with an expectation of whatever?
You decode that.
Focused on the other person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think when we talk about expectations, primarily you want to go into sex understanding that God has given us sex for specific reasons. And so that kind of forms your expectations, that this is meant to unify us, it's meant to be pleasurable to both of us. We'll talk about how it's his means of procreation, and also it's a means of protection against temptation, right? So when you have that grid of those specific expectations, you have just a general picture of this is the purpose of why we're having sex. It's wonderful, it's a beautiful gift for our marriage. And then all the specifics, then you, the husband and the wife, will kind of work out as they develop their relationship, so on. So that's one of the beautiful things about sex, is that it's different for each married couple in kind of all those aspects, and they each learn about one another through that process. Yeah? Okay. Let's go to C. Yes. Procreate. This one's easier to read. Volunteer. Noah, eye contact. Good job. Can we get Genesis 1, 27, 28?
Yeah. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth.
Awesome. There's quite a few like verb commands there, right? So let's point them out. What does he say? Be what? Fruitful. What else does he say?
Multiply.
What else does he say?
Fill the earth.
Fill the earth, right? This seems to speak to procreation. Fill the earth. There's a couple more.
Subdue.
And dominion. Right, so chock full of information. Right? And so if we're going to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, that requires that we're going to have children. Right? So that's just a broad command given at the very beginning. Right? So we know that when you think about question number two there, how does the reality of procreation help forge the ethics of intimacy? What happens to the sexual ethic when it is stripped of this reality? So, right, strip means if you make sex to never be about procreation. That's just not a part of what it is. How does that affect our view and our...
Probably won't ever start a family.
Probably not, yeah.
I mean, one of the primary deterrents before the advent of the pill to having sex with whoever you wanted is you might have children with them. So if you take that procreative aspect out of sex, then it frees you up to have sex with a lot more people than just your spouse.
Yeah. And so when we think about like God's design of he creates marriage and sex, and part of that is to create children. We see that that's one of the biggest like things that's attacked, is that there's a real tendency of our rebellion against God to try and strip all those things and break the bonds of those three things as being essentially one essence. Mm-hmm. So there's a push and a rebellion. rebellion amongst mankind, to make marriage destroy this man and woman, make it whatever you want it to be. You don't have to, right? Sex, same thing, right? It doesn't have to be within marriage. It can be between anyone at any time. Children, you can have them or not, regardless of whether you're married or not,
mm-hmm.
right? Even whether you're able to reproduce or not. So there's this sense in which we kind of live in a place where those three are meant to be totally, you can have pick and choose whichever one you want, right? Single, unmarried, I can adopt, right? I don't want kids, I can still have sex without getting married. So there's a sense in which God wants those to be united, that children come from married husbands and wives, right?
Yeah, I even look at that relationship between sex and children caused many people to be very picky about who they have, you know, as far as marriage is concerned. One, is there a commitment?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the type of person I want to have fathering or mothering my children?
Mm-hmm.
And it added a certain weight and heaviness, you know, to all of that. It wasn't to be taken lightly. It wasn't for just recreational purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, if you knew that engaging in sex was likely or almost certain to produce children,
mm-hmm.
At that time before like birth control, right? It greatly influenced our ethics in terms of choosing to have sex.
I think with that mindset of the not procreating,
mm-hmm.
it also opens the door for homosexuality, because those types of relationships do not create children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let's look at this one. This can be an interesting question. Many counselors claim that procreation should be the primary purpose of physical intimacy in marriage. What do you guys think? Get a thought right away.
I think when everybody here knows what a bicycle is.
Yes.
You have a thing called a bicycle wheel, right? And so the bicycle wheel is composed of four different parts. To say that the main purpose of the wheel is the rubber is ultimately to fail to understand that the purpose of the rubber is to be combined with all the other elements to form the wheel. And so when I think the issue that I have with saying that procreation is the primary purpose of physical intimacy is that it undermines, it tries to like create this ranking of how valuable God has made certain parts of sex. And I think that there's place for like wisdom in it. I personally don't think that it's necessarily wise to say that having children is the number one purpose of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, what if you're older or if you physically cannot have children, right? Obviously, you could argue that those are exceptions to the rule,
mm-hmm.
but still the primary purpose is that it's all meant, all four points are meant to be taken together, and that when you try to establish one above the rest, you're actually undermining all of it as a whole.
Okay, good use of the bicycle. I thought, where's he going with the bicycle? Not sure. What do you guys think? I'm sure that you guys are from lots of different backgrounds. I've heard lots of different views on how primary procreation should be.
I think it's the safest thing to think about sex with, like, growing up in a Christian home, like, sex is for, you know, making babies, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
babies are a blessing, and within marriage, like, there's no temptation to think about other things
mm-hmm.
with, you know, sex and having babies. And so I think, like, it's easy to view that as, like, the most important.
Yeah, one thing when you say that is that I often also hear there can be a tendency where when we don't embrace that this is the primary or only or exclusive purpose, however you want to say it, that then we can often tend to negate that purpose, though, or diminish that purpose and say that somehow it's lower than the other three. And so that's definite. Thing that I've heard is that I hear conversations, and one is talking about how this is a primary or the primary, and in response, there's kind of a reflex that says, "Oh no, And it brings out these other three and almost kind of lowers the sense that that's just a minor thing, instead of saying it is a very, very important part.
I think in a good marriage, they'd all combine to be in unison with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You would have a pleasurable experience, and if that would lead to procreation, but that isn't the main.
Yeah.
You want to have pleasure with it as well
right.
as the thought.
Right. I think that
then you can procreate.
Right. And I think the essence, too, is that we have to think about, like, what's, how much are you focused on any one of these things, and are you doing that to the exclusion of the others? And so we have in our Christian ethics, we do the whole thing on, like, is birth control, right? Is it acceptable? Is it permissible? Like, what's the Bible say about that? And so the idea is behind that we want to get at is that one of the primary purposes of sex and marriage is to procreate, to be fruitful, and to multiply. And so we want to make sure that we're clear in saying that is, if you are two healthy, you know, individuals and you're married, it is most of the time God's will that you're going to produce children, and that we want to embrace that as a purpose. We don't want to say that we're going to intentionally seek to just be married so we can, you know, earn a bunch of money and give and serve. And there might be some times and some opportunities and lots of circumstances where, and we can talk about this further too, where Paul talks about how some people do make sacrifices in order to be able to do ministry in certain ways. And so there's a lot of aspects involved, but we want to make sure that we understand that it is one of the key kind of reasons.
I also think the other side of that can become, for people, maybe it's hard to get pregnant, where you become obsessive about trying to make that happen.
Yep.
And there has to be a balance between trusting the Lord that what he knows what's best for
you. Yeah, that's a very good point. And so, just as before, we were talking about, like, sex is more than just this one thing,
right?
And so if you're not able to get pregnant, then, again, there's a certain sense in which you still want to trust the Lord in that and seek it and realize that there's other good things that can come from that.
And also on the flip side, it doesn't mean that the 9 months that you are pregnant, you're not having intimacy either.
Yeah.
We check the box. We're good. You know, like,
right.
No, that intimacy continues in each of those.
Yeah, right. There's many times that you're able to have not all four of them taking place simultaneously, right, where you can still have one of the others, two of the others.
And let's be honest, most of the time you're not thinking about babies.
Right.
You're intimate. I mean, like,
right.
the
right.
entire book of Song of Solomon, there's nothing about the nursery
no
in
mention.
Song of Solomon.
That's right.
But there's lots of other things there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a great point to just think about the emphasis of Scripture, and that we have a large emphasis in Genesis at the beginning, talking about God's desire to procreate, to reproduce, to fill the earth. But then we also see in Song of Solomon this real emphasis on the intimacy between husband and wife, the pleasure that's found in marriage. And we see just different aspects of sex as what it's used for, why it's so valuable, what a great gift it is from God. And so we don't want to exclude any of those aspects when we think about its purpose.
Well, like sometimes when you get married when you're older, neither one of you can have children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even if there's not sex in the marriage, there you can still find pleasure in just being together and sharing things you enjoy with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
I'm saying this from having been married the second time, and we were both older, and
things are different.
We just enjoyed each other's company.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to, let's talk about the fourth one. So, protective. I think this might be the one that is least taught about, least understood in a sense, that when we think about marriage and sex, we tend to think of probably these three the most, they'll come to the top of their head, right? That's what it's for. But is there, I volunteer, let's read 1 Corinthians. So Paul's giving lots of instruction to the Corinthian church. Andy, you got this one? 1 Corinthians 7, 2 through 5.
But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have the authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control.
Okay, so we have a good passage here, several verses. Right. So what's the basis? So is Paul talking about come together just to create unity or for pleasure or to procreate? What's he? Why is he saying that they should come together? Yeah, where do you see that? Right at the beginning, right? Because of the temptation. And then you also see it, look at the end. What else does he say?
Lack of self-control.
Yes. Oh, very end. But then right before that it says, come together again so that Satan may not tempt you, right? So it's kind of a sandwich there in the sense, here's why, right? Because of temptation, tells them what to do because of temptation, right? So it's protective against temptation. Against sin and temptation. And so he says in there about authority. Look at that where he says, the husband does not have authority over his own body, and the wife doesn't have authority over her own body. So what's his reasoning? Why do they not have authority over their own body?
I guess it becomes more about the individual than the other person. So if you have any authority over your own body, you're not thinking about the other person.
Okay.
You belong to each other now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a sense in which it's not, you're not just two individuals, right? When you become one flesh, you are one. And so... Paul also, in other places, talks about how no one ever hates his own body, but cares for it, takes care of it. So the woman is to view the husband as an extension of her own body, and likewise the husband and his wife, they're part of one body, not having authority just over their own because they are made one. Why do you think that he gives the commands to men, to the man and the woman? Notice that he goes, he says husband first, and then likewise the wife, and then verse 4, the wife first, and then the husband. So he talks to both, and he also goes in both orders.
I think it's super interesting, we talk about male leadership in the family as Christians. This is the one text where it says the woman has authority over her husband.
Yeah.
It's authority over her husband's body. But also the man has authority over her body. And so the sense of like mutual responsibility, then the practical question is, well, how does that work? You both have authority over each other's body. And it actually pushes you towards, it's not about authority, mm-hmm. It's about how do we honor, love, serve one another, being a part of the same body in this marriage.
Yeah, I think about it too, when you think about authority, how does that look like? So imagine, ideally, you come together physically because both husband and wife, like they both have a desire to at that moment, right? If we have the, each one has authority over their own body, then if one is desiring but the other doesn't, they don't come together because I have authority over my own body. And so it requires a mutual desiring, a mutual initiation almost. And so part of that, the other has the authority, is a sense that instead of when either one can kind of veto, it's either one can initiate. And either one should be able to, the husband should not, what's the word, what does it say? Look at verse 5, what's the word he uses? Don't deprive one another. So the husband should not deprive his wife, and because he doesn't have authority over his own body. And the wife should not deprive her husband because she doesn't have authority over her own body. And so that view of, I'm here for you, right, it's a total selfless focus on your spouse's view of sex that he's talking about. And again, what's the reason? Why are we doing this? Why are we not depriving one another?
So they're not tempted to sin.
Yeah, they're not tempted to sin. And so he's recognizing that, and he talks about how, in other places, just the natural desire. He talks about it's better to marry than to burn with lust, that people have these sexual desires, and being married doesn't take them away. And so there's a sense in which always being able to not deprive your husband or your wife allows them to constantly have that desire met and fulfilled, and it prevents and protects them from that temptation. So what would be the danger? What if Paul had said, just women, you need to submit to your husbands in this area as well, instead of being double-sided? What could happen there? And this probably happens in a lot of places, in a lot of marriages, where it's all about just one of them has the authority. What's going to happen in their marriage?
Resentment.
Mm-hmm. Right?
The man is just going to dominate the relationship.
There's going to be domination. There's going to be resentment. Abuse, like Joshua was talking about earlier. There can also be manipulation, right? If one uses sex as a punishment or a reward, there can be a sense in which it imbalances the marriage, where one of them is always trying to do something to kind of earn that right. Or let's go to Luke 6:31. Looked at a variety of scriptures here. So Jesus is talking about loving your enemies here. He's saying to give to everyone who begs from you, from the one who takes away your goods, and do not demand them back. And as you wish that others would do to you, do so also to them. And then let's go to Acts 20:35. Look at that one as well. Paul's speaking, and he's saying, talking to the Ephesians, "In all these things I have shown you, that by working hard in this way, we must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he himself said, it's more blessed to give than to receive." So I guess when you think about those verses, right, that's kind of our motivation. When you think about how we think about our expectations, is we're really focusing on how to give to our spouse. Right? How to give to them and think about them, think about their needs, their desires. And doing that, it's more blessed. It's mutually beneficial. That we should expect that going into physical intimacy and going into marriage, and like Andy's question about what should we go into there, just expecting whatever. We should expect that our desire is always, how can I give and make this the most beneficial thing for my spouse, and just know and expect that it should also be mutually pleasurable in all those senses. So I think next time when we get together, we'll pick out a few more things in this verse, and then we'll talk about a few other case studies before we go on. So let me pray for us. Father, I thank you for your word. I pray that today, just as we've talked about some very sensitive, very private direction and instruction, I pray that those of us who are married would take it to heart and immediately apply and talk about how we can more fully and completely honor you and honor one another, how we can love you by obeying your word and love one another by exercising a godly marriage, especially in the area of intimacy. And
For those who are not married or not yet married, I pray that this would really seek to inform and shape their conscience, shape their views, their expectations, help them to know what they ought to be looking for and aiming toward and hopeful of. And I pray that as a whole, this talk would just remind us of how our marriages are a picture of the gospel. They're a picture of love, the husband sacrificially loving his wife as Christ loved the church and gave his life for her. And the wife joyfully submitting to her husband out of desire to please, and the way that the church desires to honor and obey the Lord through obedience and submission. And pray that you would help us as we go through the rest of our morning to just honor you, glorify you in our words, in our action, in our worship. In Jesus' name.